नमस्ते, गुड मॉर्निंग टू ऑल ऑफ यू। एज मोस्ट ऑफ यू नो, द एम्फेसिस ऑन दिस टीचिंग इज ऑन पीस ऑफ माइंड, सुख शांति। दैट कैन बी फाउंड इन डेली लिविंग। थ्रू डेली लिविंग, थ्रू आर रिलेशनशिप विद अदर्स, विद आर सेल्व्स एंड विद वॉट हैपन्स इन आर लाइफ्स। पीस ऑफ माइंड साउंड्स डिसेप्टिवली सिंपल। मोस्ट ऑफ अस फील दैट द स्पिरिचुअल गोल, सो टू स्पीक, मस्ट बी मोर लॉफ्टी एंड एलिवेटेड देन मियर पीस एंड हार्मनी इन डेली लिविंग। वी हियर फ्रेजेज लाइक रियलाइजिंग द सेल्फ, अबाइडिंग इन बीइंग एंड सो ऑन एंड सो फोर्थ। द नेचुरल आउटकम ऑफ बींग एस्टैब्लिश्ड इन दिस हैज टू बी पीस ऑफ माइंड। वन कैन नॉट बी एस्टैब्लिश्ड इन बींग एंड नॉट हैव पीस ऑफ माइंड। एंड सो आई फाइंड that the great sage Ramana Maharshi comes to the defense of this teaching so often. I will read out two quotations I found in a book which stress upon this point, which Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi has made. Thereafter, you all are welcome to share whatever you like regarding the teaching or ask any questions that come up. When there is contact of a desirable thought or memory thereof, and when there is freedom from undesirable contacts or memory thereof, we say there is happiness. Such happiness is relative. It is better called pleasure. But men want absolute and permanent happiness. This does not reside in objects, but in the absolute. It is peace free from pain and pleasure. It is a neutral state. Perfect peace is of the self. That alone exists and is conscious. So clear that peace is a neutral state. Neutral because it does not depend on the external world. As Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. Not of this world, the framework of which is duality of every conceivable kind, in which I have got mired, which has converted the polarities of me and the other to me versus the other. As Joel Goldsmith would say, one has been mesmerized by the senses. And when one is out of this mesmerism, the way out being that all there is consciousness, or simply put, there is no power apart from God. then the dream of duality is punctured. This is the path of knowledge, jnan. This is the path where we are no longer unconsciously operating through the physical eyes of duality, but through the eye of singularity, the eye of Shiva, the third eye, the eye of wisdom. And the second quotation of Ramana Maharshi's, which clearly he must have mentioned this in his last days. Even a fledgling is protected by the parent birds only till such time it grows its wings. It is not protected forever. Similarly with devotees, I have shown the way. You must now be able to follow it up and find peace wherever you are. And find peace wherever you are refers to the peace that passeth understanding. A total acceptance that whatever happens is the will of God, that nobody is the doer of their actions, including myself. A total acceptance that I may do what I feel like, but the results have never and will never be in my control. My own experience, I may say something with good intent, it is taken another way. But that peace, which is like standing on a large, immovable rock, never leaves me. When I realize that this is all the Leela, the great game of duality. And those who love me and those who hate me just represent polaric opposites, which dissolve into each other with the understanding. No one can love me unless it is God's will, and no one can hate me unless it is God's will. For my own part, the question of hate simply does not arise. For if one has seen that all there is consciousness, can consciousness hate itself? So I live my life by and by without too much involvement in the story of me. I realize God has made me a certain way, maybe timid, maybe aggressive, and so has God made the other a certain way. We are all operating on a blueprint, genetics and conditioning, which become our filters through which we view life. When we realize this in our daily interactions, we no longer have the need to force our point of view on the other, because we know there is no right or wrong, really. They are just points of view. With this approach, life becomes simpler and simpler and simpler. The garbage of the thinking mind is jettisoned out, and I find I am more and more available now to what the next moment brings, pleasure or pain. I find that my pendulum is in a neutral state, as Ramana Maharshi says, in equilibrium, not swinging wildly to the left and right, one's nature becomes a kind of equanimous calm, tranquility. And when there is a disturbance, an event, something which has hurt me or upset me, I find indeed it does create a ripple like a stone thrown into the pond. But deep within, there is stillness. It is all seen as a passing show. So if you have in your own lives, in your family, friend circle, at work, those who you intuitively feel are more at peace, it would be nice to keep their company. Because the company of peace is the company of truth. The famous words, "Thou will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee." Thou will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee. Does not mean that I have to subject myself to thinking about a deity or God 24/7 in order to be at peace. If in my daily living I see the hand of God behind it all, it means my mind is stayed on thee. Which basically means my mind is not stayed on me. That is the troublemaker, you see. The ego is too busy defending its precious existence throughout the day because it does not want to die. So it cherishes all its identifications, opinions, views, judgments, feelings, and so on, because now it knows this is who I am. Based on the sense of doership. It is when these defenses are given up that peace prevails. Our own experience of deep sleep, which is the absence of the me and my story, proves this to us. But unfortunately, in deep sleep, we are not conscious of it. And therefore, this becomes the journey of finding peace in the waking state. All right. If anyone would like to ask a question now or share something, you may put your hand up. Yes, Gerald.
Good morning, Gautam.
Good morning.
Earlier you said, you asked the question, can consciousness hate itself?
Yes.
With the implication that it cannot. But isn't hate a dualistic concept? And so the implication is that if consciousness cannot hate itself, then it cannot love itself either. Can you explain what's going on there?
Absolutely right. 100% right. But why can't consciousness love itself? Because the nature of consciousness itself is love. It does not have to do love. This is a very important point, Gerald. In an enlightened being, in a sage, one could say a sage is love in expression. For example, people who would visit my teacher, Ramesh Balsekar, invariably, whether it was someone new, someone who had attended his talks for a while, they would say, we feel that we are totally accepted for who we are when we are in his living room. Wouldn't one call this love in expression? So when by and by we see this, so let's say someone has really offended us through word or deed, and we have a reaction, we will find that besides a reaction in the moment, we will no longer harbor negativity, ill will, malice, revenge, and so on to the other. Wouldn't one call that one's nature being love? So the polaric opposites of love and hate, which collapse into each other when this is understood, this is why Maharaj would say, all that I ask is you don't harm another. He would not focus on the love polarity. As long as this is seen from one end of the stick, then we start abiding in being, which itself is pure love, not the tainted dualistic love which depends on conditions. Most of our love-based relationships are conditional. And this, the nature of consciousness is love, is beyond conditions, or one could say prior to conditions. It becomes one's felt natural state of being. That is what happens.
So the concept of love that we think of as in the dualistic world is different from the kind of love that you've just described here.
Yes, that is what prompted Ramana Maharshi when he was asked to say, and I'm paraphrasing this, what about others? How do we deal with others? And he replied, there are no others. This is what I would call transcendental or true love or unconditional love. This same question was asked to Ramakrishna Paramhans by a lady. She was the mother of a child, and she said to him something on these lines that I feel I have attained. And he said, you think that, but that will only happen when you love the children of other mothers as much as you love your own child. So, this is the love which is not the polaric opposite of hate. This is one could call the non-dualistic love, a love which does not depend on anything or anyone because it is now one's nature, one's being, and that is all there is. It does not mean that the sage has to go about hugging everyone, kissing everyone. That may not be the sage's nature, but the nature being one, of one could say not only harmlessness, but wishing well upon everyone. That to me is the love which is spoken about, which does not have an opposite.
That I think helps provide a shines a light on at least one of the versions of the Golden Rule. If you love someone else as you love yourself, it's that transcendental love.
Well said, but most of us hate ourselves a lot.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. That was very interesting. It's so enjoyable to have discussions of this nature like we've had with Gerald, because my teacher would say that a person, when they ask questions, when they are certainly following the spiritual journey, the answers and the questions are for all of us who are part of the discussion. It's very beautiful. Yes, Meena.
Hey, hello. Yeah, so my question is, I've heard you say a lot like that, we shouldn't be blaming or we shouldn't be condemning people because they're just, like you've said a lot, they're following their blueprint. And, blaming people and condemning people is taking away their peace of mind, which is violence. And certainly I feel like if you're on the spiritual path, then that should definitely get less, and definitely the acceptance should grow. However, nonetheless, we're all humans, right? So maybe there could be just a little bit of that tendency, maybe not so much as someone who's not on the spiritual path, but we may still have like a tendency to like maybe judge at times, to maybe get critical, or we may end up blaming, because that's just sometimes we get frustrated, and we are human at the end of the day. So my question is, if that does end up happening and we do end up getting violent in that sense, right? So how should we, I guess, repent, or what's the way to go on about that from this teaching that you're talking about?
Thank you. So when that happens, we don't blame and condemn ourselves. You see, that is what is happening. The ego loves to blame and condemn others or itself. We realize that we are operating on decades of conditioning, hardwired conditioning. This striving to be a Buddha is going to add more pressure on us. This teaching is more for revealing that by and by, when there's an involvement, when there's an old thought pattern which comes up, it is seen in the light of clarity without judging myself. That is the spiritual journey. My God, there goes that old pattern again. So you don't punish yourself. It's not about repentance. It's not about beating yourself up. Life is going to do that in any case. You don't need to add to that burden. My teacher would say, the seeing is the only doing necessary. Everything is just seen. People are seen. The way they behave is seen. The realization that what is behind the words, the ones who utter the harshest words, are probably the most fearful. Everything is the opposite of what it seems. And so too my reactions. I have years and years of conditioning, which through divine grace will get unraveled, the knots will open up, and I will find myself more peaceful than I was 3 months earlier, 6 months earlier, whatever it may be. It is a gradual process, a gradual transformation, where one could say there's a rewiring through divine intervention, through grace, you may call it what you want. Anyone on the spiritual journey has realized there's more to life than the mundane world and the mundane existence. It is grace which has got them so far. And when that grace is allowed to operate, we don't take this burden upon ourselves that, oh, I should not have said that. I should not be involved. I should not. I should not. I should not. That is the ego which is still immersed in doership in the reverse way. The ego cannot do things to get peace of mind. It is the dissolving of the ego, the unraveling of the ego, seeing it for what it truly is. Then, when that happens, I find the peace was always there. It was just veiled by the antics of the ego. It is not a very hard sadhana or practice that one is being asked to follow. Just shining the light of awareness on the goings-on during the day, my interactions, my reactions, and allowing it to reveal itself. That is what happens.
Understood. Thank you so much,
Thank you.
honestly.
Yes, Reva.
Do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
So I've been in your room from distance quite some time, and I also have a very long spiritual journey, though I've been challenging for the last 2 years extreme pain in a way that I didn't think could come up after everything I've been through and everything that I've seen. So I've been overwhelmed with the identity coming with the pain. And that naturally has to do with my family, and especially my mother. And I thought my seeing was deeper, and not so that I was not so identified with me as the daughter to her. And I realized intellectually that she's a narcissist, and that comes that she only deeply care about herself, but it gives a lot of apart from that she's being really evil, telling me how bad I am in letters and to others, and she's punishing me now by taking away the legal rights. And naturally, I don't have much money, but and she gives it to the sibling with more. And this is, of course, I realize that when you speak and when I read literature, and I can really feel it's true in the words and in the letters, and I can also see that I am somehow deepen in the sadness. But I've experienced some really deep insights before, in a way that I felt free in periods. And that is like long time ago now. It's a lot of identification now when it's get activated with all this pain. And I feel also that it's like you said, that I a lot of maybe hate even towards myself as it comes back as a child, because my mother, I realize now that my mother was doing this already since I was little, and I was standing up for myself, but still you blame yourself and you think you're wrong. And I thought I was way past this. And it's so painful to, also for the ego, to see that, okay, I don't realize much, maybe, you know, that, and peace of mind, of course, is really deeply what I want and what I also want to surround myself with. But as we are in this family thing, you cannot really, I cannot really just jump off. I can, of course, in a way, but it's really so much more difficult than I thought, and it's going on for quite some time now.
Thank you for sharing this, Eva. You see, yeah, anything more you'd like to add?
Oh, it's really about this.
Well, you know, it's a very sorry situation, because one of the most fundamental relationships in our lives is the mother-child relationship. After all, that is where we come from. And when that is toxic, when that is full of negativity, it can have immense repercussions on the child's consciousness when it grows up, which you have clearly been subject to. In India, you'll be surprised. This is quite common. I get so many instances where, and especially a girl child, you know, whether there's a son and daughter, or two girls, but there's the younger girl, being subject to different forms of abuse, some covert, some in your face, by a parent, is very damaging to the psyche. So these things are bound to be deep-rooted. We may think we have sorted it out, but how can we? We may rationalize, try and understand what's going on, but pain is pain. You know, I remember one conversation I had with an Italian man in my teacher's satsang. He would come regularly. And we were driving somewhere, and he told me, oh, today is my mother's birthday. So I said, have you thought about a gift to give her? And he replied that, yes, I'd really love to gift her a bomb. And I laughed, thinking he was joking. And then he went on to tell me about his relationship with his mother, and I was aghast. Now, the pain is bound to be tremendous in this equation. The only balm, the only consolation is knowing this happened because it had to happen. Clearly, I had no control over it. More words than this is putting salt on an open wound. Hate will also arise in the moment. As my teacher would say, that in the moment, even an enlightened being, if he sees, let's say, something terrible happening to a child and has a gun or a knife at hand, may in the moment pick it up because it is a spontaneous action. We never know what the next moment will bring. When someone asked Nisargadatta Maharaj, "What will you do if I come to you with a knife?" his answer was, "I don't know." There were no preconceived notions about it. So it is not about hate not arising in the moment. In your case, what you've described, it will happen. All that the wisdom teachings do is show you this was part of your blueprint. Thereafter, do only that which you think and feel you can do. This is what the entire Bhagavad Gita is about. And so I would really not have much to say beyond this because it's a very painful situation you have described. It is like, it's really absurd what human beings are capable of. Another instance comes to mind where a girl told me she was getting married and her fiancé gifted her a very beautiful ring. And so she went to her mother, who they don't have a great relationship, and showed the ring. And the mother smiled and said, "Oh, it's very nice." And after a few days, the mother came to her daughter and showed a ring bigger than the one the daughter had and told the daughter, "This is the ring your fiancé should have given you." I'm appalled, but what is the consolation here? We don't know what our parents' conditioning was and their parents' conditioning. People are by and by just operating on a script, playing out their blueprint. But it is those of us, those who, through setbacks, through blows in life, come on to the spiritual journey where a possibility is there to not get stuck in the action-reaction loop like we used to earlier, which a master like Shirdi Sai Baba referred to as Rinanubandhan, the bondage of a relationship. That bondage can get perpetuated over lifetimes when we are rooted in the belief of doership. When the opportunity is given to us to see that nobody is the doer of their actions, it will not take away the pain which is allotted to me, but it will not get me submerged in that pain like it used to earlier. Pain in the moment will arise, but the psychological suffering which used to go on and on based on doership will get uprooted. This cannot happen instantly. It is going to take time, especially if you are bound in this relationship, if there's no physical gap, if there's no detachment physically or in any other way. If you, let's say, for example, you're living together in the same house or in any other way. We can fight for justice all our lives. But as Goldsmith would say, they are the laws of man and they are the laws of God. And beyond a point, if it is really disturbing your state of mind, your harmony, your peace, the call has to be taken. Which way do I go? It is a very painful process, and I really feel immensely for what you are going through. And this is all that I have to share. Someone who is going through such pain will really not wish anyone else goes through such pain in such a defining relationship. It is like a friend of ours in the satsang days. They were brothers, no sisters. And he would tell us that when the mother was climbing the steps to come up to their bedroom to put them into bed, they would quiver. They would quiver because she would hit them. And so this friend was not successful at relationships with women. It was always not working out. And now one can see why. Because the conditioning, the dynamic of Shakti, the woman, was so distorted that clearly he was not doing anything deliberately to end these relationships he got into. This is how it plays out, you see. Conditioning plays out this way. And rather than suppress feelings of hate and negativity, they need to be allowed to surface and to be released, to be let go of.
But Gautam, the problem is that what you are saying is, it's like, I've heard it so many times. I know by word that this happened because it had to happen. And I have taken the actions that I need to do practically. And I seek good surroundings and I do the healthy things. But the problem is that I've heard it in so many ways in such a long time that that it had to happen, and that it is what it is, and nobody is the doer of their actions. And I also understand it in on some level, but it's like it doesn't think down the knowledge. It's still catching me in a way that I didn't think was possible because of what I've seen. So I understand you are saying you can't say more, and I also say that, but I'm just needed to repeat that the difficulty of hearing something new or letting it sink down or having the patience, maybe. Yes,
you see, it will happen when it's meant to happen. All you can do is do your best and leave the rest to God. What you are referring to is an intellectual understanding sinking deep into the heart. And the wish is that happens fast. But that can only be a wish. We cannot guarantee outcomes. But my teacher would say in such instances, why consider your glass half empty? Consider it half full. There are people like you who have not had this opportunity to even come across spiritual teachings. They are suffering unconsciously, one could say.
Yes.
Whereas in your case, grace has at least brought you so far. So why do you think, as he would say, why do you think that God will drop you here? It is a great gift, I feel, for anyone. You see, on the spiritual journey, the opportunity is to convert unconscious living to living with awareness. That itself is a beautiful gift. Let's not discount that or be pessimistic about that. We have all come into this manifest world with specific relationship limitations. What about one as extreme as a parent who loses their child, which they love?
Yeah.
Then they are dealing with their set of karmic issues, Rinanubandhan, so on and so forth. Of course, ours is ours, so that pains us the most, no doubt. But this has to be seen for what it is. There's absolutely no control over this. All I can control as such even that much is not possible in instances, is my attitude to what has happened in life. We all wish for certain outcomes. Life shows us we may or may not get it. But at least we can try.
Yeah, and I feel that many times also, I must say, and I have good friends. Yes. Thank you.
Thank
Thank
you,
you.
Riva. Thank you. All the best to you. Yes, Harshada.
Pranam, morning.
Morning.
I wanted to share an experience. Like last week only we got to know that my father-in-law and Mithul's father, if you remember, we came last week to the satsang. Mithul asked you a question about free will and destiny will. So he got detected with renal carcinoma, like first grade. So next week will be the surgery for removal of his one kidney and then other surgery. But we were in this, like having constant satsang and having this nectar of wisdom every week with you. And we followed Ramana Maharishi also, Nisargadatta Maharaj teachings also. So it has helped us to take this situation as God's will. And we are doing what is best for us, what doctors are saying. And means we are three of us right now at home. So it has been a graceful transition which is happening on us. And we are able to take the situation without any stories or dramas, having our own, what I can say, the means it's graceful. It's going very smooth with us. It's all because your help and your teachings. It's like I want to say thank you, and it's all helping us to pass through this journey and this difficult times, or this time I would say it's like that.
Thank you
So yeah.
for sharing that. I'm very sorry to hear about this. But really, as you said, this becomes like a cushion. You know, we stop wasting our energy on asking, why did God do this to me? I'm such a good person, and so on and so forth. These why questions drop away. Pain is bound to arise. If a loved one has been detected with cancer, this teaching does not make us zombies or, oh, we are in such a neutral state, we won't react to any news. These are all concepts of being the perfect human being. Grief, pain, sadness is all, these are all human emotions. But because there's no story around it, we are more focused on the task at hand. And what arises in the moment is allowed to arise. It is really so beautiful. Really, truly, I am reminded of a very beautiful woman who came to my talk in Shirdi and who said that she had two friends who had lost their husbands in very sudden circumstances, and she was the pillar for these two friends on two separate occasions. And one day she visits Thiruvannamalai regularly. She was sitting outside Skandashram on the mountain reading I Am That, and she got a call that her husband had died. And she said, at that point, I knew whatever I was as a support to my friends was theoretical. Now I was placed in the same position to know exactly what it feels like. But yet, I found myself being outside Skandashram with I Am That. So grace does support. As Sai Baba says, Shraddha and Saburi, faith and patience. Patience, I would also like to retranslate as perseverance and dealing with whatever comes our way. So I wish you much strength in going through this, and please do keep me updated of what's happening.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Shivan.
No, it's not possible.
Sorry, I am unable to hear you.
Namaste.
Namaste.
This is Shivam. My question is that I'm going through a relation breakup. I was with this girl from 7, 8 years. Now, what is the point? Like you said, we do our best, we do our 100%. So in this case, how much I try to get her back or anyone, like any situation, what is the limit that I, this is my 100%. After that, I realize that this is God will.
That
That's
limit you have to decide for yourself.
that
All you
what I
can do is try your best. The results are not in your control.
okay.
When relationships are not meant to work out, no power on earth will make them work out. And when relationships are meant to work out, no power on earth can prevent them from working out. One has to rest in this knowing that I thought this was the ideal relationship. I gave it my best shot, but it didn't work out. I can't force the outcome. I can't force the situation. There will be pain, there will be sorrow, there will be grief. But as they say, if you love something, set it free. If it comes back, it's yours. If it doesn't, it never was. Or there's another one I heard. If you love something, set it free. If it comes back, set it free again.
That's
Sorry,
awesome.
Shivan, does that help you in any way, or would you like to ask something further?
Yeah, this is just one part of my Ashakti or Moh. I have other habits also that I'm not able to leave, or they are hurting me a lot, but I'm not able to leave them.
Yes.
One, two addictions are there. So how I see them, like let them go with their own phase, or I work on them because
See,
I'm working
we
on
all
them.
have addictions in some form or another. We all have it. The point is, when we are aware that they are hurting us, we try our best. That's all we can do, Shivan. We certainly try. We don't just sit back and say whatever has to happen will happen. But we try our best, knowing we cannot guarantee the outcome, though we wish we would like to. You see, that is the journey. That I know I have this. First of all, I don't claim ownership of it. It happened. This addiction happened. I look into my past. Maybe I figure out why it happened and so on and so forth. But I don't blame and hate myself for it anymore. Now I set forth to do what I think I can do about it. And I try and try, knowing that the results are not in my control. That's all. This just simplifies life. It does not make life easier. This teaching does not make life easier, but it makes life simpler. That is what happens.
So, can I ask one more thing?
Sure.
So, in this spiritual life, I such kind of feeling that all this raising family, getting married, and all this is not creating sense for me. So, what a spiritual person should do, like living isolated, doing meditation all the time, or like away from the society because they disturb our peace a lot for me. So what a spiritual person should do, take some very social work or I
Shivan,
don't know.
that depends on each person's nature. Someone may be prone to the ashram life, may want a reclusive way of being. They will gravitate to that. My parampara was a parampara of householder gurus. They had families, they were working, they were engaged. And peace of mind was found through life and living in cities. So as long as one is going with one's innate nature, not escaping, we have to ask ourselves, are we escaping daily living, escaping people, escaping relationships? Because they will hound us then wherever we go. I have a friend, a dear friend, who is in his early 80s working in an ashram. And he says the worst egos you meet in the ashram. He was better off staying at home in Bombay. You see? So this whole resolution is not about escaping. It is about understanding, dealing with a situation, dealing with relationships, and seeing the light of divine wisdom shine through them. If your nature is that, oh, I really feel that I'm not part of this mundane world and I would prefer doing that, try it. Or if you're in a phase of exploration, try it. There's no harm. But this must be understood that sadhana, meditation, practice cannot be limited to a few minutes in the day or a few hours. It is a practice through daily living, through engagement, through my attitude to what happens in life. Despondency sets in when people face setbacks. The job which I was striving for, I didn't get. The relationship I was striving for, I didn't get. Or I got it and what seemed the ideal job turned out to be the opposite. What seemed the ideal relationship turned out to be the opposite. So on and so forth. Then this external world starts losing its grip. That is indeed the start of the spiritual journey. But knowing this, understanding this, I now continue living my daily life. Knowing this is the nature of life, nothing is guaranteed. Yet I have to live it day by day. So it need not be necessary to abandon my daily living and take shelter away from this world. That we have to ask ourselves. All right? Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, as they say, be careful what you ask for, you might just get it. All right. Yes, Mick.
Hi there.
Hello.
I have a question about, I have a child with a sleeping disorder. And I just wanted to ask, what happens if you can't attain deep sleep? How can you attain peace in the waking life? And whether this is the inability to kind of go into deep sleep is kind of the ego at its strongest.
Can you explain why you would say that it is the ego at its strongest, not being able to go into deep sleep?
Because my child seems to be very, very in the mind, kind of very in the thinking mind, and overanalyzes everything, and so that was the reasoning behind it.
So there is no condition as such, a medical condition, which is preventing deep sleep.
We don't know. We've been looking into it for 4 or 5 years, but we haven't found anything yet.
And you do know that he has a very active mind.
Yeah.
In fact, you'll be surprised. I have friends also who still don't sleep at my age, which is 53. You know, they'll watch movies through the night because their mind is like that.
Yeah.
So it is precisely the way it is meant to be. Now, there's one thing I must add here. I feel, does your child stay with you?
Yeah.
So I find that through the process of osmosis, children pick up a lot from their parents. You see, when Nisargadatta Maharaj was asked, is there any advantage of being in the proximity of a sage physically versus long distance? His reply was, the trees near the sandalwood tree in a forest start emitting the same fragrance. So my suggestion is that if you are at peace yourself, you will be a beacon of peace to the child. And so while you can try medically and through whatever processes, I think in the West, therapy is another process which is taken to in such situations. Just being that pure field of presence and being will have tremendous value as far as he is concerned. And maybe, I don't know how old he is, but seeing, offering him to explore the spiritual dimension, to understand life, what it is about, can create some opening somewhere. If that is meant to happen, that will certainly happen. But I do feel that a parent who is on the spiritual journey in such an instance is a tremendous gift to the child.
I do speak to my, I do speak to my child who's 15 about the spiritual journey, but it's something which might take a bit of time to sink in.
Yes, and no ego likes to be told, because you see, he is not doing the lack of sleep. So yeah. We cannot tell the child that you are doing something because of which you're not sleeping. Your mind is too active. Don't have an active mind. He can't help it.
Mm.
He's programmed that way. So to add that burden on him, I think it's a boy, is it?
It's non-binary.
Okay. So to add that burden is doing grave injustice to the child.
Okay.
Some brains are wired that way. Nobody would want to not have sleep. You see? So I think the attitude of holding hands, cooperating, mm-hmm. understanding, saying I can, you know, I may not be going through what you're going through, but I can understand where you're coming from, will go a long way.
So conditioning and blueprints are all God's will.
Yes. They're clearly not ours, right?
Yeah. So because you can't change your blueprint at all, kind of your neural pathways, and you can't.
Blueprint cannot change, but if it is destined that an intervention takes place, because you see, you can't change your blueprint till the here and now, but you don't know what the blueprint is going forward. You see?
Yeah.
Something can step in, an intervention which changes the path. That we have not seen yet. So we cannot assume that the blueprint stays fixed. It is just like someone on the spiritual journey who has experienced a lot of psychological suffering in the past can assume that this is my blueprint, this is going to be for the rest of my life. But then through grace, through intervention, through fresh conditioning being imbued, perspectives change, the filters adjusted, a new way of looking at life has taken place, and I find there's a shift. That shift which has resulted more and more in peace of mind. That too is the blueprint. So let us not assume that we know the blueprint till the last breath. All we can do is try with awareness, with grace. That is why the masters say, you take one step towards me, I'll take 10 steps towards you. It is not an empty promise. It is not a fantasy in the air. Why would they say it? So I certainly don't view such scenarios as hopeless scenarios. They may appear to be. You know, in India, in the scriptures, it is written, it may not make sense to the Western mind that one enlightened being impacts seven generations of the family. It doesn't make sense to the logical left brain thinking, because we are so left brain, we are so logical. We have analyzed everything till kingdom come. But the right brain, the creative brain, the brain which should be allowed to flourish, which is nourishing, that dimension, when it opens up, things change. Everything is there, every relationship is there for learning. The parent learns from the child learns from the parent. That is why they are karmically brought together. Lessons have to be learned. All right. Anything else, Mick?
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Thank you. Pleasure. Which part of the world are you in?
I live in Germany. I'm an Englishman in Germany.
Oh, okay. Do we have more time? I'll take one more question. Yes, Sarthak.
Thank you. To be or not to be, that's the question, to which the answer is, who cares, just be.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a question. It's just not here to make jokes. I find myself very lucky that I'm given the opportunity to visit Mumbai on Monday after quite a while. And the first thing that came to my mind was to visit the Samadhi Shrines at Badan Ganga. So I just wanted to ask you, like, how should I go about that? Like, I know there's no instruction manual or anything like that, but I would still like you appreciate your thoughts on that and just like, you know, kind of handhold me how I should, like, you know, be more present and absorb the experience and all that.
I don't think you have to do any of that.
Okay.
Just be yourself. Just be your glorious, beautiful self. Go there and say, I'm here and please grace me with your blessings and enjoy it while you're there. It's a very nice, beautiful, peaceful place. I presume you're referring to Siddharameshwar Maharaj's Samadhi.
Yes.
I think just go with lightheartedness and you'll have a great time.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
It's really strange, but you know, the English-German fellow was talking about his non-binary child not being able to sleep. It's so funny that my mother this morning, she was like, can you do one thing? You know, sometimes while your father is sleeping right next to me, he starts moaning and grumbling and I don't know what's happening in his mind while he's asleep. Can you just like come there in the middle of the night and kind of, you know, negate all of that so I can sleep, because I start getting nightmares because like his presence, like I sleep and then I start getting nightmares. She asked me to come over there, sit there for some time so her nightmares kind of like go away. And I've started enjoying that. And it works.
So are her nightmares going away?
They are. It works.
You see, that's great. I mean, at least they are just nightmares. For many people on this planet, the living life is a nightmare. The situations they are facing, what they are going through, thank God we are not going through that. And we only have nightmares when we sleep. After all, 90% of dreams and nightmares are psychological reactions to the waking state. It's all actually what is within us, which is coming out. Nothing else. That has to be seen for what it is. Thank you, Sarthak. And I really wish you a great journey to this spiritual dynamo, which is Siddharameshwar Maharaj's Samadhi. I'll take one last question. Dipali. Yes, Dipali.
Hello, sir.
Hello.
So I watched your couple of videos regarding free will and destiny, and also the Ramana Maharshi quotes. So, my question was that I read this quote of Ramana Maharshi. He was saying that the only freedom a man has is to not identify with body and have its consequent actions. So when I talk about like spiritual these things to with my family members and friends, they don't seem to be too interested in that. So my question is like getting into this spiritual thing and to opt for liberation, is that also predestined? And like every single thought that we get, or the every little of the things like sneezing, that are also predestined?
Everything is predestined, as Ramana Maharshi himself said. When he said that there is no free will and someone put up their hand and said, me putting up my hand means I have free will. He said, no, if I had not said there is no free will, you would not have put up your hand. But more importantly, Dipali, rather than go into that discussion, if you find yourself in a family which is not supportive of your spiritual quest, then do find a community or a place you can visit which nurtures this process, these thoughts which you are having, because it will be beautiful if that happens since you're not getting it from the family. There are many people who don't get that nourishment from their family. And this dimension, if you can explore that, that would be really nice for you.
I tried contacting you through Instagram messages or mails, but I did not get any as such response. So yeah, but today I got lucky, so I'm asking you a question.
Yeah, so yeah, that is it.
Yeah.
Everything is predestined, but we won't know what it is that is predestined. Then we tend to assume things.
Yes. And so also since I was a kid, I don't know what I had in me that I want to, because I was a curious as a child and still as an adult. So I was like, I need to reduce the sufferings of the people somehow, because I kind of saw them going through so much pain. But then something happened with me, and I just kind of read about few cases, and they extremely just blew my mind that how can sufferings be to at such a level that I couldn't have thought of it as a child. So it kind of gave rise to fears in me that whenever I would go outside, so I would be like, if someone is going through which would trigger that, what would I do? So yeah, it just have had an impact on me like that.
Certainly, and you didn't choose to be the way you are. God made you that way. You see? And allow that force to take you further. All right. You're welcome to come back on the next Zoom and ask any more questions. Where are you based?
I live with my family in Ahmedabad.
Ahmedabad. And how old are you?
I'm 25.
Okay. It's nice when at a young age one starts asking these questions. Isn't it beautiful? Makes life more interesting, I feel.
Yeah, there was a one point of time where I was like, what's the purpose of life? Why I do exist? Because it just doesn't have to be like sleeping and eating all the time. It has to make like some more sense.
Yes,
So
absolutely.
yeah.
Most of life does not make sense.
Yes, so yeah.
And when we stop trying to make sense of life, we find we are more and more at peace. It is trying to make sense of life and what happens in life that takes away our peace.
Yes.
All right. So do come back if you have something else to ask. I'll now change the
Absolutely.
view. I'll change the view so I can see all of y'all clearly. And for 2 minutes, we'll just sit in silence. You see, my teacher would say that anyone on the spiritual journey needs to know that they didn't start the journey in the first place. God did. So this need to control the spiritual journey is not needed. That force which has made us start questioning life, wondering what this is all about, and so on, has to be given the reins of the horse. The ego tries to even take those in its own hand. This compulsive need to control our lives and others' lives is what disturbs our peace and others' peace. God does not really need our help as such to run the show. Our cooperation, yes, but we start taking matters into our own hands. That is where the trouble begins. Thank you.